Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to what was going to be just a regular episode of the Goblin's Den, but I have a treat for you. Let me give you some backstory. A little over a year ago, I pitched an idea during one of our Scum of the Earth Let's Plays that we were going to do a show called The Movie The Game, in which we would review movies based on video games. But because of lack of interest by some of the other guys and a format issue, it just never came to be. Well, flash forward to today, and me and Jason and the other guys, we do a podcast every now and then. And on it, we sometimes review horror movies. And I noticed that someone I really respect and admire their work also likes reviewing horror movies in their spare time. So sent them a message, invited them to the show, gave them a list of horror movies that I thought would be cool to watch. And of those movies, they picked Resident Evil. And it dawned on me, that is a movie based on a video game. So what the hell? We'll just call this Movie The Game Episode 1. And my guest today, really excited about it, the mastermind behind my favorite show online, Jay Hunter of OSW Review. Jay, how you doing today?
Hey, that's me, Jay Hunter. Sorry, mate. I thought you were going to go into diatribe about Broken Sword. It all started with the one-year review.
This is the cunt that made us review Broken Sword. And then I just shut you off.
I'm so sorry, Chris. That was, what, 18 parts?
18 parts. And he quit. And he quit at the, like, he didn't do the last three episodes. He walked off. He was like, I'm done.
So I gamed the thread. You asked, what should we do? And you gave out a list of things we could do. And I said, everyone within the sound of my Twitter, go to the YouTube page and say Broken Sword. And hooray! I get my way.
I'm glad you did. I am glad you did, though. As much as I fake outrage over it, we did get quite a few subscribers. In fact, I would say that Scum of the Earth is a history of leeching off subscribers from OSW Review.
Hooray!
That's our bread and butter. So for some of my fans... Awesome, so. Yes.
No.
No. It's like, how do I handle this compliment? Do I just take it, or do I revel in self-pity? So for some of my fans out there who haven't seen your show, and I can't imagine that there's many, what does OSW Review provide?
Hellos, welcomes, old school wrestling video podcasts. It's filmed in glorious grapple vision, encoded with blast processing. We chronologically critique wrestling storylines pay-per-view by pay-per-view. I'm the host. This is just my intro spiel from the show.
I know. Yeah. It's like, I have a feeling you have a soundboard of yourself. I could, and you reached over and hit play.
So myself and my two best friends, Steve and Steve, V1 and OSC, we do a roundtable podcast reviewing old wrestling shows, and we splice it to video footage of the show.
And it is fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much.
I look forward to your show more than anything. I never thought I would say that about something other than Plinkett. And I know you guys are a fan of Plinkett.
Wow.
But in my eyes, you guys have surpassed Plinkett and Best of the Worst for my favorite internet show.
Wow, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
It also doesn't take you 3 years to make an episode. So that might be... You might have the edge there.
Keep people keen. Yeah, that's it. Dying every Christmas, we're going to see a new episode.
So, other than reviewing wrestling, though, on your site, oswreview.com.
Woohoo!
Is it oswreview.com or osw.com?
No, OSW is some goddamn photographer. He stole it. No, oh, he had bastard. It since, like, 94. I can't get that. But, no, it's oswreview.com.
He could be a time traveler. Just wanting to fuck with three guys from Ireland. A really bored time traveler.
Jeez, sorry, mate. The state of your life.
The state of your time machine. So, on your website, though, you also review horror movies. So, I got to ask you, what do you look for in a horror movie? Like, what's the necessary criteria for it to be a good horror movie in your eyes?
Well, I have very low expectations. I watch a lot of horror films, so there's a lot of dross. Most of it is terrible. I suppose if you can just have good anticipation, like build up suspense and try not to have the terrible tropes. Like, if you do the kind of startling boo scares, I think that's just the cheapest. But not be god-awful would be my number one.
It's great that you mention startling boo scares, because I have a feeling we're going to be talking about that.
That's not horror, by the way. That is not horror. Startling is not being scared. They're completely different things.
It reminds me of going to a haunted house and some carny jumps out and brushes you. He's in a sheet. Ooh. It's like there's the initial shock, but then once you realize that's just a carny in a sheet, fuck you.
Yeah, oh my god, it's Shane Douglas. What are you doing here?
Yeah. I said a haunted house, not Target.
Very good.
Oh. So, what are some of your faves just off the bat?
I love The Shining. I think it's incredible. Just as its cinematography. It's just like so beautiful as a movie, and it's just creepy. And of course, Jack Nicholson is incredible. Like, he's already kind of halfway insane when he's normal, and then just goes full blown crazy. And it's just a masterclass. I felt so bad for Shelley Duvall, because just going, having to act beside him, and she just screams and runs away, and he gets all the glory, and he's so fantastic.
Well, Shelley Duvall also got tortured on the set. Kubrick really wanted to, like, have her screams be genuine, so he just was just super mean to her and forced her to have a mental breakdown. But it works.
Yeah, it turned out great, so there you go, method acting.
I honestly think it's the greatest horror movie ever made. But it's cheating by having Stanley Kubrick be its director. I'd have to say second best horror movie, in my opinion, would be The Omen. I always said The Exorcist, but as I'm getting on in age, The Omen is kind of creeping up there. Like, that's a movie that genuinely kind of creeps me out. And it's not... There are some boo scares, but it's more of a tension that builds. Especially the scene where they get attacked by animals while they're in the zoo. That scene right there is very, very intense, and that's what I like in my horror films. If it's a good horror film, if it's a bad horror film, I just want to see a skeleton being suspended by fishing line, and then I'm set.
You know,
we're gold.
In the US version of The Shining, they actually have these extra scenes which expand mostly kind of Danny at the start of the film, but they also have some extra scare scenes at the end of the film where Shelley Duvall's running through the hotel, and one of them is just these shitty skeleton props posed on leather seats, and it's just, oh my god, this would kill the film if you actually showed this. It's just skeleton props on fishing lines, and one of them's like a waiter holding up some drinks. It's like, oh god.
Why do I imagine it's just as bad as the old woman prop on a skateboard in The House on Haunted Hill, that old Vincent Price movie? Well, let's get into this movie. This is Resident Evil. So let's get some facts about Resident Evil just off the bat. And it's important that I stress these following facts. The budget for this movie was $33 million. It grossed $102. Shaun of the Dead. I'm going to talk about two other movies. Shaun of the Dead only had a budget of $6 million. Day of the Dead had a budget of $3.5 million and was made in 1985. So those of you listening at home, keep that in mind when we talk about Resident Evil. So first of all, Jay, you have kind of a history with Resident Evil. It's one of your favorite games, right? Or series, right?
Yeah, yeah. Got a Jill sandwich right here.
Jay, the master of unlocking. Now, your last name, Hunter, that's a pseudonym, and you actually take that from the big green boogans from the first game, right?
All right, it was... Yeah, it's actually from Triple H. I used to be a Triple H mark as well.
Obviously, when he was a big green boogan.
Yes, the hunters, the green frogs out of Resident Evil are my favorite baddies. So,
oh, they are great. It's such a shame they weren't used in more of the other games. Honestly,
no idea how. Well, I was going to say that because they're not in the movie, and they just use liquors twice. They use them in Resi 2 as well. I was so angry. So.
This movie takes a lot from RE2. There's very few stuff from RE1, honestly. Because, like, isn't Resident Evil 2 the movie, just Resident Evil 3?
Very good, yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, so it's like...
Let's just skip the best Resi games. Let's skip Resi 1 and skip Resi 4. Hooray! Get straight into Resi 5.
Yes, that's the movie we all want to see. Resi 5, the movie. Just shot completely in Africa by Michael Bay. So, let's go to the opening of the film. The film opens with Homer Simpson arranging plutonium rods. No, wait, I'm sorry. It's some guy in a hazmat suit, and he's packing up a bunch of samples, it looks like, into a briefcase. And then all pandemonium just breaks out, pretty much. And this scene, I think, was actually kind of interesting. It was a good opener, at least. The guy packs up a bunch of these samples in a briefcase, and then as he's walking out, he just casually tosses one on the ground. Something inside of it breaks, it goes in a ventilation shaft, and then the entire building just goes crazy. What did you think about this scene, Jay? I mean, was this a good opening for a Resident Evil film, or...?
Well, before we start, I have to say thank you to... was a Paul W.S. Anderson. He filmed it in my favorite and the best aspect ratio, 16:9. As I absolutely hate black bars watching them on your TV. Like, otherwise, to get rid of them, you have to zoom in, or if you watch the black bars, you're only using like 70% of your TV, and that annoys me greatly. So, kudos. So we get like an intentional T-virus outbreak in Umbrella Labs. If you played the games, you know that's the T-virus. And then all of the employees go crazy, and you get to see a load of them kind of shovel into a lift. And my favorite exchange, there's one guy that he kind of looks like Edward Norton. He gets his coffee spilled on him. He's like, "Oh yeah, thanks, mate." And he gets a bit agitated, and someone tells him to take it easy, and he's like, "You take it easy." I thought it was great.
Winning dialogue off the bat, just sharp as a tack. I think it's great because the cameras, we see, I don't want to say POV because they're not people, but we see shots from the actual security cameras in the building that's tracking all of the people running around going crazy as klaxons are blaring and that people are just offhandedly, "Oh, it's a fire drill. Don't worry about it. We just work in this super secret underground umbrella facility, but it's probably just a fire drill." And on the cameras, it actually has biohazard warning. And it's like, "Oh, if you're Japanese, this would be the titular line of the film." Because in Japan, the actual series is called Biohazard, which I think makes a lot more sense than Resident Evil. That's just my opinion, though.
That's because of the copyright for the metal group, right? Biohazard?
Oh, I never thought about that. Yeah. Huh.
Well, then it is. Yeah, it is, yeah.
That's the truth. So the scientists are in like a kennel or something doing experiments on animals, and the sprinkler system starts filling up the room with water, and a guy who looks a lot like Amit Zappa grabs a fire axe and starts trying to break through bulletproof glass. A woman's head gets knocked off when she tries to climb out of the lift that has broken down. And the elevator, like in Maximum Overdrive, I guess, becomes sentient and shoots up real quick and boom goes her head.
Yeah, it's a bit of Final Destination, all right. But I actually thought the kind of lift decapitation, that's quite Saw, but this would actually precede Saw. So good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I actually quite liked this opening scene. I think it was filled with a lot of... for a horror movie, a lot of harmless fun. I mean, anytime someone gets their head knocked off, that's not really scary. Maybe that's just me. I don't get scared by people getting their arms ripped off or decapitations because that's something that's so far removed from reality. So for me, it's like, haha, you know, it's like Final Destination. I watch Final Destination, I laugh. I know that's not the intended effect, but to me, those movies are more just goofy, complicated Rube Goldberg devices that murder people.
That's quite insightful. I was just thinking of, you know, the Evil Dead remake? Because there's some horrific stuff that happens in there, but it's kind of, it was weird because when I saw it in the cinema, there was only a couple of instances where the crowd actually went, "Ugh," you know, or, "Oh man, I feel the pain." And it was not any, you know, getting your limbs chopped off or any of that. It was actually, there was a guy who got pushed and he just fell like liver first into the porcelain toilet seat. And it looked like it really hurt. And so everyone's got, oh god, poor guy.
If you want a horror movie that'll shock people, 2.5 hours of people banging their knees on tables.
Oh man, there you go.
That'll just
you do wince.
Like the climax of climax of the movie, a guy sits down wrong and he sits on his balls, and then boom, you've just made the ultimate horror film. So the next scene, we get the Aeon Flux shot as it's just an eyeball opening. And then I'm reminded that this is not animated by Peter Chung. It's actually a live-action film in Pan Out. And Mila Jovovich is in the shower, but she's lying down in the shower naked. A shower curtain draped over her body, so we don't see too much naughty bits. And it's funny because the water's actually running, but her hair is completely dry and styled, which... right there takes me out of the movie, but, you know. So she's walking around in this scene in, like, an amnesiac stupor. You know, she's, like, she doesn't know where she is. She's feeling around objects, and she finds a note that she thinks is written in her handwriting. And this is kind of where we get the strongest sense that she's amnesiac, is, if I'm pronouncing that wrong, please correct me, you're a doctor. She finds a note... and she actually writes down on the note in her handwriting what's previously written on the note to check and make sure that's not her handwriting. So it's kind of like, oh, you know, did I write this? No, that's not my handwriting. So she's totally unaware of what her own handwriting looks like. So that's kind of the strongest indicator that this person's mind is screwed up. And then she puts on Ada Wong's outfit for some reason. Despite not being Chinese.
Yeah, because, you know, it was actually a different dress than the one she was wearing, the one you get to see. It was, it's weird. And she actually finds a matching, like, tube top skirt as well. So, you know, lucky for her. Mila Jovovich. Yeah, very hot, naked, strategically covered, very movie logic. And she's not married to the director, Paul Anderson, yet, but... as, like, it's fine probably for first three movies, but she does kind of not let anyone else be the protagonist in the series, like, past her sell-by date. So she turns into a bit of a, you know, Hogan hot dogger.
I'd say definitely this series will become, maybe not this time, but it will become a man's constant quest to get his wife over. And it's just, and then you're going to do this, you're going to do this. Honey, can I kick the dog? You're going to kick so many dogs, baby. Stick with me. We're going to go down to the pet shelter and you're going to kick so many fucking dogs. Just chomp on a cigar. It's great, though, because the scene, it's shot in such a way that it reminded me more of, like, Silent Hill. Because she's like, oh, I don't know where I am, and it's so empty and vacant, and there's these noises as, like, you know, wind brushes through the leaves, and like, there's a angel covered in cellophane that spooks her. And I'm like, are we just going to hit every single survival horror game in one movie? Because by the end of it, we're going to already be at Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, or Outlast or something. But it quickly becomes a Resident Evil movie as guys in tactical military suits show up. And that's kind of where, in my opinion, the movie starts to fall apart. It's just, I don't know.
Well, first off, Alice here, she's an entirely new character.
Yes.
What's wrong with using established characters? Like, because Resident Evil and its lore is why people are going to see Resident Evil the movie.
What's wrong with it is that Mila Jovovich doesn't like wearing pants, so she can't be Jill. That's my only guess. That is honestly my biggest pet peeve. Is it's okay if you're making a new character and this is supposed to be like another part of the Resident Evil lore. But what this series does, the film series, it more cannibalizes the Resident Evil lore. Because later on in the franchise, we do get to meet Jill, and I think maybe we can get to meet Chris. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so long since I've seen any of the other ones. And they're just bitches compared to her. They're useless. They're as useless as, like, RPG protagonists you refuse to level up. They are essentially Yuffie and Cid from Final Fantasy VII. And now I'm going to get hate from people saying that they were the best characters. But they're just constantly, Alice, what do we do? oh, we gotta wait for Alice, you know? And it's like, yeah, I would have much rather seen a remake of just the story of Resident Evil 1.
Can I just give out for a minute? You know, George A. Romero, you know, who did the Dead series, like, he originally penned the script for this movie, but it was thrown out by the producer, what's his name, Bernd Eichinger, and he left the project over it, and they brought in Paul W.S. Anderson. But, like, it was said that his script has Chris and Jill as the protagonists, and, oh my god, it's too much like the video game, they won't see the movie if it's like... That's exactly why people would see the movie, because it's like the video game. And if people see the film, they go see the video game, because it's similar. So that just pisses me off. Like, I'm not saying, like, there's no need to have such a radically different story and plot, and... I'm not saying make the film into like a mansion puzzler, spending half an hour finding the wind crest or something, but come on, just make Resident Evil the game a movie.
I gotta disagree with you 100%. That's the film I want to see. I want to see puzzles. I want to see people pushing pillars. I want a reference to a Jill sandwich. I want Barry walking around just, what's going on? But no, I totally agree. They threw out the creator of the zombie because his film paid too much of an homage to its source. That is mind-boggling to me. Here you have someone who is revered as a master of horror, a true master of the horror genre. And he is saying that your story is good enough to be adapted. He is giving you his gold star. And then you're saying, eh, nah. Needs more acrobatics. Sorry. Oh, you actually wanted to use giant spiders? Ugh, get out. But you know what? I will say this. If it wasn't for them throwing out George A. Romero's script, we wouldn't have got what is possibly some of the best dialogue in movie history from Rosario Dawson. Rosario Dawson is one of the, in my notes, I just call them SWAT members or Umbrella Task Force or whatnot, shadowy operatives who break into the mansion. And there is another person there, some dick cop who kind of looks like Dane Cook, and he's trying to get Alice to get out of the house. They tackle Alice, they tackle this stupid dick cop, and he's screaming, "You can't do this to me, I'm a cop!" And one of the SWAT team members takes her mask off. It's Rosario Dawson. And she goes, "Blow me." It's the height of comedy right there. I know Resident Evil 1 didn't have great dialogue, but I think that's even subpar. So they're walking around this mansion. Alice and this stupid Dane Cook looking cop, you'll notice there's a recurring theme where I don't know any of the characters' names. And a lot of the characters aren't even named. If you go to the IMDb page, it's like Mr. Blue, Mr. Red, Mr. Gray, Medic, Captain. So, big theme of characters not having names in this. Apparently, Alice has some kind of role to do with why she's in this creepy house. And it has something to do with Umbrella and something to do with the previous scenes we saw. But she can't remember it. They go underneath the house, and apparently there's just a large train down there. And it's one floor beneath the house. They don't go down several flights of stairs. They go down half a flight of stairs, and there's a concrete complex in a large fucking train. That has to be really annoying during dinner time. And you're just holding on to your plates and knives. And shook, 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 shook.
Underground trains, that's very Resident Evil, so I quite like that a lot. And we guess, there's obviously a lot of strong Alice in Wonderland references as well. Obviously Alice herself, and, you know, she'd find it, see how deep the rabbit hole goes with the, because you get the train literally going, you know, very deep down and stuff. And later you get to see the Red Queen, that's the Queen of Hearts. And
you're making my skin crawl.
And then, you know, shoot zombies in the head, that's like, off with our heads. And, yeah.
I think you're taking some liberties with the metaphor.
And
now.
But they also have a white rabbit that's a test subject as well.
Oh my god, I didn't pick up on that.
They can't all be coincidence. I'm sure there's more if you see things that aren't there.
Yeah. But I the Alice in Wonderland thing and the Red Queen, that is probably the strongest link in the Alice in Wonderland metaphor. But I also think that is the hallmark of hack screenwriters, is that's their first go-to. It's either the Bible or Alice in Wonderland. They got two sources and that's all they can draw from. You know, no one's going to adapt Kurt Vonnegut or Thomas Pynchon into a zombie movie. It has to be something like that. So yeah, they're going down this train. It's funny because each SWAT team member takes their masks off as soon as they get into the complex. And it makes me think, why even bother wearing them? Is outside deadly? Or is there poisonous gas outside of the mansion? And you're only safe once you get inside? So
It's for dramatic effect, silly.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. See, I apply logic to films, and maybe that's why I didn't enjoy it this much.
I meant the characters want dramatic effect.
Oh, the characters themselves. Yeah. They are aware they're being filmed. They're trying to impress the evil AI that killed all those people in the previous scene. They're like, we're gonna scare the shit out of this computer. But Rosario Dawson she's trying to repair the train because it won't start. And here's where we get our first jump scare. And there are quite a few of them because this movie can't be scary on its own. It has to rely on Shane Douglas in a ghost costume going, ooh. And she's repairing the train and one of the other SWAT members jumps down and is like, wah! And she's like, ah! He's like, jumpy. Train starts up. They open a compartment, unconscious guy falls out, and the guy who said jumpy to Rosario Dawson before, he's scared, and so she quips back, jumpy. So we've had two jump scares already, neither of them involving an actual monster. So that's kind of where this movie's going. I mean, right off the bat, you can tell this is just going to be a movie that takes a lot of shortcuts. So while on the train, it's revealed that the guy in the compartment that they opened, he's actually supposed to be Alice's husband. I think earlier in the film, I might have skipped over this. She's like looking at her personal effects and there's a picture of her married to a guy. But not after, I clocked this, 2 minutes after they reveal his character, they reveal that their marriage is a sham. You two were actually you know, agents working for Umbrella, and underneath us is the Hive, and it's this underground facility where we do all our testing, and we built this mansion on top of it, and you two have a cover story of being a married couple, and you're to watch the entrance. So the first mystery that could have paid off really cool at the end, they've already ruined. And that's also another theme of this movie. They hate plot twists. They like to throw them out and resolve them as soon as possible. There's not a lot of, like, building of mystery that then pays off at the end. It's like the moment a plot twist is kind of hinted at, you can be guaranteed within the next two scenes it's going to be resolved. So yeah, after that it's just running.
Did you like the music montage running down the steps?
It's a lot of industrial music running, and then they'll stop for a bit and he'll give some exposition and then it's back to running.
Yeah, you get a lot of action music sequences in the film. Like, I love Marilyn Manson's synthesized metal soundtrack. Like, him and Marco Beltrami did the soundtrack. I think they did an awesome job. Although, sometimes it's a bit hilarious. It makes it, like, let's make walking more interesting. Let's have a big montage to it. But I just wish they used some orchestral video game music in the film. It was really missing. Like, Silent Hill, the movie, does it really well. It just uses, like, music from the first three Silent Hills in it. And it's just awesome, you know?
Because, I mean, in the original Resident Evil, correct me if I'm wrong, I was a much bigger fan of 2 than 1, honestly. I have played 1, but 2 was the one I played over and over again. But they would use traditional string and piano stings when something scary happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the sound of boom. And this, it is just, you know, it's the 90s, the early 2000s, which were just the 90s reprise.
Yes.
So it is all,
it kills any kind of tension.
I really think it did. Like, it would be good music in a sci-fi movie, like a hard science fiction, like they're not hard science fiction, like but like a action sci-fi movie where it's like they're gunning down a room full of robots, or the Terminator's coming after them or something, or a robot dinosaur maybe. But for a movie where it's only fuel is jump scares, I don't know. See, I was actually a Marilyn Manson fan as a kid, but I really think that after Antichrist Superstar, his chops just kind of dropped off. Whatever magic was gone. And to this, it feels like not even trying.
Oh, well,
it feels like a loop.
Definitely. It's not music as such as kind of... it with instruments, he seems to be doing it on his MacBook. But I actually thought it was pretty cool. Actually, check out...
The studio's flooded. I'm just going to do it on my MacBook Pro.
There you go. As you check out Golden Age of Grotesque, it's very depressing, but it's an excellent album as well.
Okay. I'll have to give that a listen.
But then he started doing albums after he broke up with his wife, and they're all about love songs, and oh, that's the decline. That's the, like, season 19 of The Simpsons.
Why couldn't he be like the guy that directed Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels? What was his name?
Oh, that's not happening.
Presque-vous. But yeah, the guy was married to Madonna. The moment he was married to Madonna, his movies started to suck. And then the moment they got divorced, he made Sherlock. And I was like, okay, he's back. You know, I was kind of hoping that would happen with Marilyn Manson.
Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie, yeah. I was hoping that a bitter divorce would drive his creativity. Instead, it made him even more of a pussy. So anyway, we're introduced to the major antithesis, which is the actual mansion itself. And here's kind of where, for me, the movie is done. The mansion itself is run by this thing called the Red Queen, which we talked about earlier. It's an AI that's in defense mode because someone released the T-virus. And instantly, it kills off four of the people who are kind of introduced into the movie.
Oh, whoa, hey, whoa. I think we shouldn't we miss a few scenes there? Sorry, can I just give out about Spencer? One thing, you mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. Alice has amnesia, so that's like the best excuse for exposition. It's like, you don't remember the Hive? Let me tell you all about the Hive and the history of Umbrella.
And let me show you this detailed 3D map that I have.
Yeah, it's from these computers rendered in the 90s. It's awesome.
Oh, God, they love that 3D rendered map. Whenever they need a shortcut to showing where each character is, they keep cutting back to it.
And
I think things in the game look better.
Yeah. No. And then we get to meet Spence, who is James Purefoy. I was so saddened because I thought, oh my God, it's Tom Jane. And I get to make like Arrested Development references. Oh, I just want my kids back. But it's James Purefoy, who is Mark Antony in Rome. Well, so that's good too.
See, I didn't know who any of these people were. I even went to their IMDb pages, and to me, it's just like nobody. Girl from Fifth Element, but I already knew that. Rosario Dawson, nobody.
Go. I was just going to say that we go, the lads go down to the containment area and have a look at where we were, kind of at the cold open at the start, and you get to see the scientists that were being drowned. Or no, she's actually drowned. And they look at her and she's like, oh, poor bitch. And then they walk off and then she's like, oh my God, I'm alive. Startling horror shock. Oh, God.
But at least it's a jump scare involving an actual monster.
It's baby steps. Yeah.
Baby steps. Is this baby's first horror film?
Horror is a bit insulting to horror.
Yeah.
It does have the tropes of horror, but you know, as such, it's not really. It's an action film with horror elements, I guess. Actually, yeah. It's an action film with Resident Evil elements. Right? Anyway,
which that's what the game series has become now.
Yeah, actually,
the game series is now an action series with horror elements.
Yeah, so there you go. They're ahead of the curve on this one. Anyway, so the Red Queen, the computer's AI program. So she's new as well, just mm-hmm. like Alice. But she wormed her way into actual Resi canon. So she's actually in Umbrella Chronicles. So you know, good for her. I just think just having a program's kind of represented by like an unnerving creepy little girl is very cool.
I think it's pretty cool, except there's one part of the movie that kind of takes me out of it.
Her British accent?
It's not that it's a British accent. It's that it's she is a literal child talking. I think they actually got an actual child to do the voiceover, and she pronounces the word profitable, profitable, like how a little kid would. And it's like, who wants to hear that when you're hearing like reports on the comings and goings of your multi-billion-dollar company? It's like, oh, this project is no longer profitable. You know, it's kind of ridiculous.
It's the best we could do with the money we had available.
Like, look, the child is free. You have to buy a subscription to get the adult voices, okay? There are budget cuts in effect.
Yeah, you could have got Matthew Perry's voice if you bumped up to the Platinum package.
I was hoping it would kind of be a Dr. Spatzo, one of those old programs.
Nice,
yes, text-to-speech. We have a zombie problem in Umbrella Labs.
Now that'd be hilarious. But anyway, it wouldn't lighten the mood too much. And they also have a bit where they actually shut down the power of the Red Queen. So when they shut down the power, they just cut to elsewhere in the area, and stuff changes, like opening doors and lights flickering from green to red, that kind of thing. I thought that's very Resident Evil, so good stuff.
Yeah, that was actually kind of cool. But as I was saying before, the major problem of this movie is that the little girl robot is the main antithesis, and she kills four of the characters right away. In horror movies proper, and we've already said this is more of an action movie, but even in action movies proper, there's the 10 little Indians principle, where you knock them off one by one. And that's kind of where the tension comes. Like, oh, who's going to get it next? And when you have four characters just drop dead, and it's not caused by what we all came to see, which was zombies and monsters, it just seems like the movie just shot itself in its foot. Maybe there was an actor's strike, and they're like, okay, we got to get rid of four. This movie's getting too expensive. So the rest of the movie is them pretty much trying to escape this underground facility. When they shut the Red Queen down, which was, it turns out that's their goal, is to shut her down and then investigate why she killed all the people, it releases a bunch of zombies who apparently were being contained by the Red Queen. The Red Queen, it turns out, might have been right to do these things when we get towards the end of the film. Because while she did murder a shit ton of people, it was to contain a wave of zombies, and as we mentioned before, the liquor makes a cameo in this scene. In this movie, and it's kind of weird because the liquor, if you noticed, he's about 10% lighter than all the backgrounds.
What are you trying to say here, Chris?
I don't know. I just,
you're saying it's not on the level.
They wouldn't do that to us, right? Mm. I mean. We have so many talented makeup effects artists. I don't think they'd take a shortcut. Not for $33 million.
All right, he'll get his later in the film. So we get the awesome glass laser room, the famously cool light laser room.
It is cool, but I mean, did it really need to? Was it? I think two people, and it would have been just as effective. But we lose the captain right off the bat. He gets kind of like, you know, those wedge fries you get. The laser beam, at first it cuts off someone's hand, and then someone's head. And then someone thinks, oh, I'll jump over it. And it cuts that guy in half because the laser
That's
beam can move.
Such bullshit. It's like, you've set out the parameters. Here's where the laser moves. You jump and it meets him in the middle and slices him in half. I felt very bad for him. Very hard done by there. But, of course, this is a room where they go in and, like, rats on the trap. The end of it closes. It's a beautiful room. You should know something's bad going to happen with such a cool-looking room. Because it's basically like a glass prism, a massive glass prism. And so the laser slices all of them, and they manage to hack it and turn it off. But not before main commando dude gets latticed into many parts. Felt very bad for him. He was the best of them.
Because he actually, he kind of outmaneuvers it. He does some Spider-Man technique and clings to the ceiling, and the laser passes by him. But then on the second sweep, the laser's like, aha, now I'm a Star Fox villain. And it just turns into a giant fence of lasers and just cuts him to pieces. And he crumbles into a pile off camera. And it's funny noting because the exact next scene, Kaplan, the hacker guy who's trying to open the doors, he walks in, cuts to a POV, and he looks down. And at his feet, he sees the person cut in half, the person missing a head, and the person missing part of their hand. He doesn't see the big pile of guts that was the captain. I think maybe they built a prop and realized how stupid it looked. And we're like, okay, we'll shoot around it.
Yeah, it'd be like just a big tray of sandwiches or something. Just leave it out.
There should at least been some squishing noises, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
They should have just, like, a thin layer of jam on the floor. Anyway. So let's skip ahead in the movie.
Oh, hold on. There's just one snippet that I really like. It's like,
okay,
later on they pass through the very same hall, which is now spick and span, and the bodies are gone. And one, they didn't leave behind a green herb or an ammo clip. Like, bastards. And
you're useless.
Come on, cheapos. And Kaplan brings attention to that's a video game trope. Obviously, they disappear when you leave the room and come back in. And he just said, "Where the bodies go?" And I thought that was pretty awesome. And the whole sequence here in the glass laser room, that they actually do it. They pay homage in it in Resi 4 with Leon. He does the laser room sequence as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So it makes me wonder how come the captain didn't leave a bunch of blue medallions behind so that Alice could then go to the shopkeeper.
Yeah, there you go. What are you buying?
Hopefully a better movie.
I'll buy it at a higher price. 50 million.
It's on Blu-ray disc. 16 by 9. No black balls. So let's skip ahead a bit because the rest of the movie, we finally do get the zombies. In fact, the first zombie doesn't show up proper till 43 minutes into the film.
Right, you actually timed that as well.
Yes, I know, because I was like, what the Resident Evil zombie game? This just feels like Splinter Cell. It bites Rosario Dawson, and that's when I realized the horrifying fact. As hot as Rosario Dawson is, she cannot act. She is so bad. I think the line is, she bit my hand. She took a chunk clean right out of me. And I'm just like, oh man, I hope you get it next in the next scene. Guess who survives till the end of the film, folks? We get so many more great scenes with Rosario Dawson. Thank you. Thank you, Paul W.S. Anderson.
She annoys me so much because she's the same character in every film. She's like that in Lost and SWAT Team and was it Battle Los Angeles or whatever. She can only play one character and that's this angry, stuck-up bitch Latina. You know, and
it doesn't want to meet her in real life.
It mixes up, you're mixing up strength with just angry bitch. No, she's not strong. She's just an angry bitch.
Yes. She also has an out-of-control libido. Because any strong character that's a female has to mimic the traits of a strong man. So, of course, she goes, blow me on my invisible dick. And then there's a scene later where she's beaten and bloody and she goes, huh, when I get out of here, I think I'm gonna get laid. That's a line written for Jesse Ventura in Predator. They clearly are like, oh, tough woman, right? So she wants to be a man. That's how she's going to act. But yeah, you're right. Every movie, Rosario Dawson is just pissed off Latino woman. Like, she doesn't even need to have a name in movies. It just needs to be pissed off Latino woman in the credits. Or just, and Rosario Dawson as herself, if that's how she is in real life. Which would kind of be cool, honestly, if you got to meet her and she was like, hey, can I have your autograph? Blow me. And then she just pushes you down a flight of stairs.
I actually love this containment zombie scene where, because you get to see, we're in a horror film, because it's a corridor made of these grimy containment cells and just random dry ice. Like, where does dry ice come from? What's all this mist?
To me, it looked just like the Nostromo from Aliens. Or sorry, Alien.
Yes, I'm sure that's where they were going with it.
But isn't that kind of jarring when you're in the pristine crystal hallway with its fancy lights, and then one block over is just this dingy, grimy, large pipes, steam spewing everywhere?
Well, that, I don't know. It worked for Star Wars Episode 1, where they're in this beautiful old-timey Italian monastery-looking thing, and then Darth Maul shows up, they go into the next room, and it's like this massive power cell containment spick-and-span unit. Anyway, that makes complete sense.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard the phrase, well, it worked in Episode 1.
And everyone loves that film.
Oh, yeah. It's a masterpiece.
But we get... Sorry, just this bit. I really like the Marilyn Manson soundtrack here because it kind of starts off with kind of... I don't know how he uses his plaque, but it kind of sounds like it's a heartbeat, but it's synthesized. So it's kind of like anticipation of quiet, and there's kind of a bit of dread, and they have like a rolling canister that tells you that someone's there, and then they have one of the zombies is dragging an axe on and off, and I thought it's really,
Amit Zappa.
Really
Amit Zappa's back.
Excellent. Did he bring David Arquette with him?
Sadly, he did not. But you know who he did bring with him? He brought zombie Andy Samberg and zombie Jason Segel with a poorly digitized missing face. We also see a zombie who's missing half of his head. Now, Jay, how do you kill a zombie?
Oh, wait a minute. You're going to get me to say something that'll contradict it. Not happening.
I'm pretty sure George A. Romero and later the Red Queen herself discuss you destroy the brain. Why is the zombie missing half its head and still walking around?
Because the zombie's right-handed. Boom. Mic drop.
Oh. Oh. Damn. You win. You win. Podcast over.
No, that's
here's your trophy.
That is a huge plot hole. It looks cool, obviously, but...
It does look cool, but that is my biggest annoyance with any zombie property, is when a zombie is shown with a fatal head wound, and you're like, change the rules! To destroy a zombie's liver!
Maybe this zombie is from Dead Space.
It looks like they're in Dead Space. That's what the set looks like.
Yeah, they could have walked onto the set of, what is it, the Nostromo? No, it's not the Nostromo. I don't know.
It looks like Event Horizon.
Yes.
The movie looks like Event Horizon.
This scene, actually, just because Marilyn Manson is scoring it, I always thought he actually has a song that fits perfectly into this scene because they're actually looking for survivors and they see a zombie and they mistake it for a survivor and they really don't want to shoot the zombie because they just think it's a survivor and there's others there. So, but he actually has a song called "The Reflecting God." It's from Antichrist Superstar, and it's Marilyn Manson shouting at you, shoot, motherfucker, shoot, and
one
the world gets
shot
smaller,
and the world gets smaller. I remember that song. Wow, someone else who actually is unashamed to mention they like Antichrist Superstar. That's amazing.
Hey, it's the 90s, brah.
It seems like Marilyn Manson is just something that everyone was like, I was young. He had some great tunes. I still think that his first album's like one of the best hard rocking albums out there.
Yeah, he's incredibly talented. His stuff is quite depressing and stuff, but it's melodically, it's very, very good. He's an intelligent guy.
But the world turned his back on him.
Exactly. And his wife.
And his wife. She went with the world. So they're fighting all the zombies, at which point we get a scene where one guy is frantically trying to open a door. And this is where I want to talk about Shaun of the Dead and Day of the Dead. That's why I brought them up at the beginning of this podcast. This guy's frantically trying to open the door. He gets it open and the zombies all grab him and proceed to tickle him.
Yes.
Yes.
They're very playful zombies.
They grab him and they pull him down and we cut to a POV shot of them just wiggling their fingers on the camera. I'm surprised they didn't get their makeup smeared on it. And that's it. There's no hand getting ripped off. There's no neck being bit. Both Shaun of the Dead and Day of the Dead have two amazing scenes. Hokey though they may be, but at least it's something, where a guy is pulled apart as he's walking through a door by a group of zombies. In Shaun of the Dead, it's when the dick boyfriend gets pulled apart by the group of zombies, and you see his organs being, you know, pulled out and his arms being ripped off. And then a very similar scene happened in Day of the Dead 17 years before that. And those movies had 1/6 and 1/10 of this movie's budget. This scene made me actually go back to the IMDb page and check and make sure this movie was R. Because I was like, is this movie PG-13? Because there's no excuse why they couldn't just get some fake limbs from a costume shop and just, I don't know, like you're crowd surfing. Have that pass over the crowd of zombies. You know, a hand here, a leg there, or something. But yeah, that's the tickle zombies,
but,
I guess.
But now the character's gone. It's an emotional roller coaster. You have to take a time and zip it.
They slow it down, and he goes, "Don't let go!" as Rosario Dawson's trying to pull him out. And then tickling. In slow-mo. I got choked up. So, let's just talk about my favorite scene, and then we're going to wrap this up really quick, because we're going way over time. I apologize. I'm just having so much fun talking about this. Let's talk about the dog scene. Jay, can you lead me through the dog scene? I feel like I've been dominating this. This is such a choice cut of this movie. I want you to talk about the dog scene.
Well, we have zombie dogs. Of course, the film doesn't actually say zombie in the movie. That's very, if I may aside, that's very movie logic. Horror films mm-hmm. don't exist in the world. So they skirt around it. They call them infected, reanimated, undead, all that. But zombie dogs, you see one, chases Alice down into a room, and then she turns around, and ha-ha, there's many zombie dogs. Dogs in zombie makeup, because they don't look like zombie dogs at all. They just, they're perfectly healthy dogs with some red smattered on them.
And it's great. I love it.
And then the big climax is that, oh my god, she does an acrobatic, she does a wall jump, and she kicks one of the dogs, and hooray.
She runs up a wall and kicks a dog in the face in slow motion. Did that not just complete... At what point are you like, movie done? I'm speechless. I was speechless when I watched the scene, because I must have blanked it out of my memory, because I saw this before when I was young. I saw it in theaters. I actually wrote down, this is not Street Fighter. You are not Chun-Li. Don't be jumping off of walls in my horror film. Or actually, I guess she'd be more like a female Vega, climbing up the cage wall with a big claw on her hand and just beating the crap out of dogs. But I don't know. I kind of like the fact that the dogs were real dogs, though. This is one scene where I think I much preferred having actual dogs as opposed to having CG.
Yeah, fine. I'm sure if they had CG dogs, they would look horrendous. But you can see it's like dogs in zombie makeup.
Their heads would be too small, or their legs would be too big. Getting a person is tough enough, but getting an actual dog is really hard. But it's great, though, because I actually watched it behind the scenes of the making of this just one scene, right? And someone quips one of the stagehands, "I think the dog is the best actor in the movie." I agree. So we get more people dropping off like flies. It turns out that the cop, I just call him Dick Cop. He's actually a spy sent there to destroy Umbrella. And he tells Alice, big corporations think they're above the law, but they're not. They are. Apparently this guy's never been in America. Think about the shit the Coca-Cola company does that we know about and they get away with. Come on. But next to Rosario Dawson telling a man to blow her, this is my line of the film. He says, "We needed a sample of the research Umbrella was doing." And Alice goes, "What kind of research?" And he quips, "The illegal kind." No fucking shit. He says it with such important gravitas. Like, it's illegal what they're doing here. You have just seen people being eaten by zombies and four men chopped in pieces with lasers. Of course what they're doing is illegal. You wouldn't be here if what they were doing was illegal. He makes it sound like, I've got a bad hunch about this place. And he's just seen people being, I guess, tickled to death, but still, people murdered, so...
And so he sees his sister, and she's actually looking pretty. She's pretty zombie hot, I have to say.
Yeah, she is. I mean, she could just be someone who's just pale.
Yeah, could have just went to work. She was late, no makeup, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's like, maybe take care of yourself. It'll bump you up to a 7 out of 10.
So all the lads go to the sewer because they want to find a cure for getting, what's her name, Ana Lucia getting bit. So they go to a sewer. I thought it was a really cool part where she actually, her name, Michelle Rodriguez, she actually gets bit a few more times in the last sequence. And there's a cool bit where they're actually kind of hiding out at, like, on top of some steel gratings, and she's just dangling her hand over a big frenzied mob of zombies that are kind of enjoying all the smatters of blood falling down on. Oh, that was pretty cool.
I gotta disagree. Here's my disagreement, is when they pan back and you see just how far off the ground they are. They are probably 8, maybe even 7 foot off the ground, that pipe. And there's all these zombies. I want to say all the extras, there's at least 50 of them. In other zombie movies, zombies can climb, maybe even a little, or like in like, I never saw the movie, but I know in the book of, the Max Brooks zombie book, that zombies would kind of just pile up on each other to get to higher places. They dogpile. What is stopping these zombies from just using what little upper body strength they have and just pulling themselves on top of this pipe with them? Like, I could probably reach it if I stood on my tiptoes. I think if they would have at least used some kind of camera trick, I could have suspended my disbelief.
Maybe they're so tightly packed in the area they can't fall over.
Oh, that's good. That's good. They're like sardines.
Or maybe they just give up very easily. They're not highly motivated zombies, you know?
Oh, that, you know what? That would be a movie I would pay to see. A zombie outbreak happens and it just takes decades because the zombies just are not motivated. Anything, like the moment you get 3 foot away from a pack of zombies, they turn right back around and go back to doing what they were doing.
There's a pretty cool scene where Kaplan, he's one of the SWAT team guys that works for Umbrella. He's a good guy, sorry. He is stuck amongst zombies and he's on this large pipe and he's got one bullet left. And the guys end up, he says, leave us behind, I'm dead meat. So he has one bullet left and he puts it in his mouth and we assume he commits suicide. Ah, ha, ha, it's a fake out. He decides he'll live and try to escape. They're going to have to work for their food.
That is a good line. I do like that he uses his last bullet instead of blowing his own brains out to shoot a zombie. But do you notice that he looks like to his left and sees an exit? Like,
yep.
That's the, like, preceding that scene, there, yet again, there's no mystery. It is just, oh, okay, I guess I'm safe. Sorry, movie fans. I feel like he was kind of being a little overdramatic, what with sticking the gun in his mouth, when if he just would have cocked his head, he would have seen that he's perfectly fine. We get to the reveal of the baddie of the film, and that's the fake husband,
yeah,
right?
Spence.
Yeah, Spence turns out to be the person that stole the virus in the beginning and caused the outbreak. More importantly, he's the dick that spilt the coffee on that guy. What an asshole.
Yeah. Do you know if he was spying on Mila Jovovich and your one's sister, and he was just using like a shotgun mic that you have on a camcorder? It was hilarious. But
I think I have the same brand. I think it's the Asden Z2-21-8.
Well, there you go. Boom.
So if I want to spy on Mila Jovovich, I am well equipped. Yeah, well, I guess we did skip an important plot element of the movie, is that throughout the film, Mila Jovovich gets some of her memory back, and she realizes that she was helping Dick Kopp's sister, the mildly hot zombie, to break into Umbrella and get the dirt on them. At which time, Spence was spying on her, and I guess to impress her, he decided he was going to steal the stuff and just sell it. Oh, or maybe, I don't know, maybe he saw the writing on the wall and thought, oh, if they're going to take Umbrella down, I'm going to get mine and get some money. And he tries talking Alice into going with him. And at which point he makes a huge movie mistake. He sits there and explains his plan and his reasons for doing things as a zombie gets up out of the water and slowly comes after him and he gets chomped on. But unlike most movies, he actually gets away. from getting chomped on. You think he's going to drop the gun, they're going to pick the gun up and they're going to run, but no, he's like, ah, fuck you, zombie, get off!
You see they have like a kind of flashbacks, and Spencer kind of remembers that he is the bad guy. He sabotaged the expose and intentionally caused the T-virus outbreak. But it seems like Alice had the same revelation at the same time. Can she, like, see his thoughts? Or, like, I don't understand how she could figure that stuff out as well.
I know this character is similar to Leeloo from Fifth Element. I didn't know she just was Leeloo from Fifth Element. And she could, like, link with his mind and peer into his dreams.
Excellent.
Like, amazing. Amazing stuff. You know what? This is a direct prequel.
Excellent.
At the end of the movie, she gets killed and then mummified, and then Bruce Willis wakes her up 1,000 years.
Boom. Right there. Money.
There you go.
Spence, as a James Malfoy, his accent goes all over the place. Like, when he's giving his diatribe, he's like, bitch of a computer, defended outside the hive. What? Is that the best take you had? And there was an amazing bit where people just, the good guys try to converge on him, and he's got a gun on them, and he's just like, fuck off. Because the gun isn't good enough in the face.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he's using coarse language, he must mean business. I also love it that you instantly defaulted back to your cookie from Scooby-Doo movie.
That's how he says computer.
The computer! The computer's gonna stop Triple H from discovering the virus antidote.
Computers.
Well, speaking of the computer, they had to turn the Red Queen back on to help them get out of here. And she tells them to cut off Rosario Dawson's head with an axe. And her logic is that Rosario Dawson's been bit, and even though they found out there is a cure, there's no guarantee it'll work considering how long Rosario Dawson's been exposed. But they're good guys, and of course they refuse not to, at which point Kaplan, who we assumed had been eaten by zombies until he looked to his left, turns off the Red Queen, and they all book it out of there. Not before Dr. Computer gets killed by the liquor, though.
I have a question, though. Could they not have said, here, Ana Lucia, why don't you stand in the corner and I'll just go out and I'll get the T-antivirus and bring it back in?
Yeah. Just lie to the computer.
Well, I think she might have been all right with that. If you're saying, here, I'm going to lock her in the room and I'll just go out. Because
the computer's motivation was, I can't allow the virus to spread.
Which is really a face thing, really. It's quite Jack Bauer. It's quite utilitarian.
I mentioned that earlier. The computer's right, because the next scene, the climax of the film, they're on the train, they're getting out of there, the liquor's chasing them. What happens to Rosario Dawson?
She turns into a zombie.
She turns, regardless of the fact they inject her with the antidote, she turns into a zombie.
Red Queen was right.
The Red Queen was right this entire film. They vilify the one thing that has any logic in this movie. Maybe there's a message to that.
And so you see at the start of the film, she would have gassed like a lot of the Umbrella employees, but some of them would have been infected already. So if you kill them with Halon gas already, then they wouldn't turn into zombies. So you're actually saving them that death, you know? Because they're in the locked room with zombies.
She tells them not to turn off the power. And when they do, the liquor gets free.
Oh, that was actually pretty cool. They had a shot of the like containment pots hooked up to wires. And when you first get to see the liquor, it's a shot just straight out of Resident Evil 2's police station where he walks across the glass and this one walks across the wall. And it's,
That scene in Resident Evil 2 that was my first introduction to horror proper in video games. I got real freaked out as a kid when I played that. And, you're walking around, you've just fought a bunch of zombies, so you're thinking the worst is behind you. And then there's a good nothing for 10 minutes. There's no monsters for a good 10, 15 minutes in that game once you reach the police station. And you walk by a door and, like you said, the liquor just runs by real quick over the glass. I screamed. I'm not afraid to admit it. ice cream pretty loud when I was a kid.
Oh, it's an awesome moment, all right.
It is. It is. Resident Evil 2 is filled. I could see kind of why they cannibalized a lot of stuff from RE2. Maybe they didn't think this film was going to get a sequel, and they thought, okay, well, there's too many moments in this game that can't not be in a movie.
So you can either do unique police station, or you could do generic laboratory. You know?
Yeah, I think if they would have skipped RE1 and just made this completely RE2 and saved the laboratory for the last 20 minutes of the film, it would have been great. Or even just do RE1 proper and have the mansion be the big chunk of the film and then the laboratory. But that being said, I have a feeling that industrial factories are cheaper to rent, especially abandoned ones, which I think I read that a lot of this film was shot in abandoned or unfinished industrial factories. They're probably cheaper than renting out actual large mansions, and they would need a preposterously large mansion and probably have to shoot over several different properties to give the illusion of a house that is as big as an RE1. So maybe it was a budget thing, but then again, they had $33 million. They could have built a house. Yeah. Universal Studios did it. Come on.
And so, what's his name? Spencer, the bad guy, he gets his just desserts. He was eaten by, oh man, we get to see the liquor do his business. And even by 2002 standards, it's pretty ropey.
Yeah, I wrote down, looks like a Ninja Turtle. Just straight up. He looks goofy. The moment the liquor turns at the camera, and they kind of do a trick to hide it. You initially see the liquor jump Spence after Spence has injected himself with the antidote. The liquor jumps Spence, but then it cuts to the rest of the characters watching Spence being eaten on a monitor. And the monitor, much smaller aspect ratio. It's dingy. There's scan lines. So they were trying to hide. They were at least conscious of how bad this looked. But I just don't understand why they didn't build a physical prop. Because
They actually did. They have two physical liquors. Like, they show one of them just has a moving head, and it's like when they were stuck in the half in the waist deep in water, it was like banging against the window, and it's like, oh Jesus, state of your prosthesis.
But aren't those scenes, as goofy as they are, aren't they at least a little bit scarier than straight up Raphael jumping a guy in a hallway?
Yeah, because at least you can appreciate it's actually there, you know, and it's a physical thing as opposed to just this floaty light CG.
I mean, if you go back and you watch the original Alien, which I know I keep dipping into, but it's for a creature-centric horror film, that's a great place to look at. It doesn't hold up that well in the scenes where you see the alien. You can clearly see that wires are moving the lower lip of the monster's mouth. You can clearly see that they're using a rope to suspend the tail. But because it's physically there, it is 100 times scarier than the best looking CG thing. Because as good as something the CG looks now, within 5 years, you're going to be laughing at it.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
And sadly, yeah, that's what happens to the liquor. The scariest monster in Resident Evil, in my opinion, becomes kind of funny. So they're fighting the thing on a train. They're fighting Rosario Dawson on a train.
Which is straight out of Resi 2 as well.
Which is great, but, you know, and that, isn't it Birkin? The guy who invented the T-virus?
Yeah, William Birkin. Very good, yeah. So he mutates into this liquor-type massive mold of cells and teeth.
So it was a good callback, I guess.
So they're on the train, and the liquor gets on the train. It's mutated into something bigger. And it was amazing. So they're fighting the liquor, and the liquor actually slaps Alice with its tongue. It slaps her in the face with it, and she goes, ah. It's like, that's quite playful, isn't it? And
he does look kind of like a dog.
And there you go. And it was actually quite clever. They open up the floor doors and they stick a pipe through the liquor's tongue. And so it's kind of stuck there. And so the liquor falls through the door and it's actually skidding off the railway tracks underneath and it catches fire. And I thought oh man, that's awesome. What a great way to go.
Yeah. And it's cool because they did establish the doors in the beginning of the film when Rosario Dawson is trying to fix the train in the very beginning. That's how she does it. Is she opens up the floor doors on the train, jumps down there, and then connects a connector to the train track to, you know, and like big sparks fly up. So we are subconsciously told this door opens, it's electrified, it's dangerous. And so there's kind of a payoff at the end of the film, which I did appreciate. I love that it wasn't just characters screaming, "Open the doors!" And the audience is going, "What doors?" We knew what they were talking about and when. But at the end of the film, Kaplan's dead. Rosario Dawson, as a zombie, is actually blocking the button to open the doors, at which point they shoot her in the head. She falls down, hits the button. Then an old man falls on a seesaw, which causes the net to fall on the mouse, and the game of Mousetrap is over. The liquor is fried. And so we have our two final surviving heroes. We have...
Mass.
Yeah, Matt, and we have
Cop,
Alice.
Cop, Dick Cop.
Dick Cop. See, I never wrote down his name. He was always just in every single line of my notes, Dick Cop. So Matt and... or Chris Redfield Light. And Alice, they make it out of there. Jay, did you want to run through the ending of this film?
Just two things about that scene. One of them is whenever they show a stopwatch and it gives you a countdown, I immediately whip out a stopwatch app and I'll count it and see how they do. So it says 8 minutes on it, but then it's like, and then after they get off the train, it says 15 seconds left, but. It's only 4 minutes, 42 seconds went by. So they're just about 3 minutes cut out. So I didn't like that. Bit disappointed.
They had time to spare.
Yeah, yeah. And also Ana Lucia there, what's her name? Rodriguez has really ropey dialogue when she's turning into a zombie. It's like, I don't want to be walking around like one of those things without a soul. It's like, it's quite poetic for someone about to die. It's like if someone scripted this, you know?
I like how this big, tough chick talking about blowjobs and getting laid suddenly is philosophically waxing poetically about the existence of a soul or not.
Yeah, she does it all. There you go. So it's Dick Hoff, Matt Addison, and...
Alice,
thank you. Escape the Hive, and they walk through the mansion again. It's always lovely to see the mansion. And they get captured by some umbrella dudes in hazmat suits.
The doors fling open, and there's a big bright light. And at first I'm like, aliens, it really is a Silent Hill.
Oh man, just a dog working the controls. Like, oh my god.
I'm still waiting for that movie to happen. I'm still waiting for a Silent Hill sequel that ends with a dog working the controls.
So the umbrella scientist slash hazmat guys, they drop the words Nemesis Program and Raccoon City, i.e. Resi 3, Resi 2, and it's very much, man, I'll see you for the next film. And yeah, it's actually cool. You think you'd end the film there because they've escaped and they get carted off and that. But the ending scene is actually very much a start of the next film teaser because Alice wakes up. She's in a bed in Raccoon City where they strategically... she's naked, but they strategically clothe her.
Oh, here were some of my problems with that scene, though. One, has the Aeon Flux opening again. So that's kind of cool. It's a cyclical ending. But when it pans out, she's naked... covered in gauze, hooked up to a bunch of medical equipment. And I'm just like, Luc Besson is just filing a lawsuit right now. It's like, I don't care that you stole Jovovich away from me, and I didn't get to make the sixth element, but come on, guys, now you're just getting silly. If Bruce Willis shows up, I will have my lawyer call you tomorrow. Sinatra!
No, we need C-grade actors here. No, not a chance, mate.
We need for a C-grade Bruce Willis. We would need Bruce Willis from our current time to show up. Not early 2000s Bruce Willis, where he still could think and act and tell jokes. We need dead on his feet. Who Bruce Willis might be a zombie for all we know. If you see him doing promo work for Red 2, and he's just like, oh, the movie. It's gonna be good. I'm gonna take some more Thorazine.
So Alice gets on a jacket. She covers her nudie body, and she leaves the building. And she has a look around a devastated Raccoon City, and it's cool. We actually get newspaper heading that says The Dead Walk. It's a lovely Day of the Dead reference there. And it also mentions Stars on it. That's a special op team in Resi. And yeah, so we just get this big kind of teaser pan out, big camera shot showing the devastated Raccoon City. And boom, see you for Resident Evil 2.
Which actually is Vancouver, Canada, I learned, is where they shot that specific scene. When they zoom out, though, I did kind of have a problem because she's completely alone in the city, right? And we see quite a few blocks as the camera pans out. I think it might have been more effective if they were just some zombies on the outskirts. Because it makes Raccoon City seem empty. Which, correct me if I'm wrong, the beginning of Resident Evil 2, the game at least, one of the coolest things were just the roving gangs of zombies. And it made you really think the outdoors are not safe. You need to get indoors at all costs. And at this, it feels kind of like, I don't know, maybe like 28 Days Later, which was a film that used very few zombies. And we'd already established in this world's lore, zombies are horde creatures. You know, when they're in the facility, there's hundreds of them in packs and droves. I think it might have been just like, I'm not saying have her jam packed with zombies. I'm saying just a few on the outskirts, on the periphery. Like the moment you get zoomed out, maybe have two or three or four or five just walking around. This, it made it feel like, did the world blow up? Where'd everybody go? Did they already blow up Raccoon City and she just completely missed all of Resident Evil 2? She sleeps right through 3, wakes up for 4, and we get the best movie ever made.
Wow, that's how big the event was. It's so big, you skip Resident Evil 2 and go to Resident Evil 3 already.
Yeah.
And
well, don't they? Because doesn't Nemesis show up in the next film?
Yeah, they sure do. And yeah. Just to clear out the cinema as soon as possible, they play a Slipknot song over the opening credits.
God damn. Freaking Slipknot. And I don't know if it's the Slipknot song, but one of the song does remix in, and I give out about this all the time, how it annoys me. When soundtracks to movies slip in lines from the movie, it's very late 90s, early 2000s Limp Bizkit soundtrack, where at the end of one of the really bad industrial songs, we get, again, "When I get out of here, I think I'm gonna get laid." Because that's the line of the film, ladies and gentlemen.
Because I'm a man. Men are strong, and I'm a man. Yep.
I ain't got time to bleed. So, let's wrap things up here. Overall, what did you think of the film?
Well, first I'll note that the film, the credits roll after 1 hour 34, which is the perfect length of a movie. Thanks for not being 2 hours. No, I enjoyed it. Thought it was an easy watch. Seen it a couple of times. Of course, I thought the best parts about it were referencing the game, and unfortunately most of it's more of a film that has bought the rights to use the names of things out of Resident Evil rather than Resident Evil film. But in general, it's a large step up from pretty much every video game movie that came before. Well, aside from Mortal Kombat 1, I thought that was really awesome.
Which was also a Paul W.S. Anderson film, wasn't it?
Yeah, kudos to you. The plot kept moving forward.
I went to IMDb before doing this.
Yeah, good job. I enjoyed the soundtrack, the plot, and the pace keep moving forward. Kept it interesting. And yeah, so that's enough positives. I thought it was a win. Of course, the dialogue and the characters and all that, the very base, and it's, you know, feels very 90s and stuff like that. But overall, 7 Jill sandwiches out of 10.
Ooh, wow. You and me agree on wrestling for the most part, but sadly, when it comes to Resident Evil, I think we couldn't be further apart. I was bored. I don't know why. And I tried watching it again, thinking maybe I was in a bad mood, but I don't know. I think for me, it was because there wasn't enough time spent in the mansion, and you automatically get to see the shadier side of Umbrella. And the little British girl robot being the real true monster and the rest of the monsters being kind of pushed back, I would probably give this 3 lockpicks out of 10. I would not recommend it. And while video game movies are pretty terrible, I would say I think Mortal Kombat was a better movie than this. Because while Mortal Kombat was super cheesy and had Christopher Lambert, who I cannot stand. It was goofy enough to be fun. This one, I felt, took itself too seriously, but wasn't good enough to take itself seriously. I think it could have either been cheesy and fun, or let George A. Romero direct it instead. Because Land of the Dead was not a good film, but I think Land of the Dead was better than this, which is what George A. Romero, I think, did around 2006, 2007-ish. But that's just my opinion. So sadly, it doesn't look like we're on the same page here.
We'll average it out as 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. And you know what? Maybe I was being too critical.
I was being too nice as well.
See, this is how the world should work. This is how you debate. Oh, man, I'll boost it up. I'll boost it down. There you go. Peace in the Middle East at last.
Now, I'm just thinking, that's only one away from 8 out of 10. And that 8 out of 10 is a great score. And this is above average.
6 out of... You know what? We'll give it a 6. And we'll call it a day. 6 out of 10.
Sounds good.
Sounds great. So this has been the movie, the game. I want to thank Jay Hunter. OSWReview.com. Check out... What's your next show? I think you're doing ECW December to Dismember is what's coming down the pike, right?
Uh-huh. Technically, yes, but we thought it would be a good idea to cover the first episode of ECW on Sci-Fi. And yeah, it's a whopper show, lots to talk about on it. But it'll probably take at least kind of 15 minutes to cover it. So we're going to release that as a kind of quicker show in between and then do December to Dismember afterwards.
Another Brucey bonus episode. So... find it kind of odd that you're watching the first episode of ECW after we just talked about a zombie movie, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it all ties in. It's all kismet. And
yeah, there we go.
And of course, you can see more of Chris Bond's work right here, reloadlatsafe.com, and go visit Scum of the Earth on YouTube.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that plug. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and who knows, maybe we'll do one of these again down the line. We'll see where the road takes us. But for now,
it's a goodbye from Chris
and Jay.
And remember, oh wait, this is not winner. My show, this is your show, sorry.
Oh, you didn't even let me say it. I wanted to say it. I've been waiting to say it.
Okay, so remember,
a winner is you. Now let's give off on how much we hate Yanks.
Bloody Yanks. Oh, question for you.
Yeah.
You know ribs?
Yeah.
Are there different types of... Oh no, actually, even bigger question. I was telling you I was at a barbecue festival and went straight for the chicken wings, okay?
Yeah.
And there was an option of normal chicken wings, or original, and... boneless. Now,
yeah.
What is boneless chicken wings?
Oh, that they take large chunks of processed chicken. So maybe, you know, pieces of normally white meat. So breast and thigh. They process it down much like they do like a chicken nugget. And then they just deep fry that.
Okay.
So it's kind of a pseudo chicken wing.
And do you guys have chicken balls in America? No, that's not a joke. This is if you go into a Chinese in Ireland or anywhere in the British Isles, you get chicken balls. It's like a 2-1-3-1. It's a very important staple of Chinese restaurants takeaways.
I'm gonna say not in Texas. Sadly, there's not a booming Chinese population down here in Texas. We do have some Indochino stores, but I do not think chicken testicles are...
Because those are just, what you described is exactly what I got, because I tried boneless and bone. It's just a like a cube of chicken wrapped in some kind of batter. And that's a chicken ball. That's not boneless chicken. I thought there was some kind of breakthrough in science where they've managed to make a chicken wing without...
America is the cruelest country. We breed chickens without any bones.
But think about how delicious they are if they can't move.
We just freaking hook a hose in their mouth and just shovel cornmeal right into it.
See, if you didn't want to be eaten, you'd not be so tasty. How do you think the dung beetle gets away with it?
It's your own damn fault, chicken. No one's buying boneless skunk, are they?
Thank you for clearing that up, anyway.
Okay. I don't know if this should go in or not, but I think it might.
It's,
I'm still recording.
It's very important. I felt hard done by it because it was false advertising. I thought at least it would be the same, I don't know,
yeah,
chicken skin or something, I guess.
Oh, you know what? That makes me sad because it makes me think of some poor immigrant whose job is to debone the chickens. they just every day they just pour a giant pile of chicken meat on his, I almost said desk, in like a trough, and he has to sort through it and just pull bones out and throw them on a big pile behind him.
That'd be
horrifying.
Oh, good time. Good times anyway.
I'm having a real fun time, like, actually talking to you, so maybe that's why I'm dragging on a little.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's nice to talk to you, too.
This is the first time we've had an actual conversation, so.
Really?
This is kind of a big deal. Yeah, we've only talked in emails, man.
All right, okay.
Yeah,
I listen to your show, and then if we talk on emails, I kind of put the two together in my head. I do that sometimes.
It freaked me out when you first said hello, because it was like, Jesus Christ. I don't know if he's real or not. Okay, so then I'm just going to just do a real quick...
That's really weird. Sorry.
This is all going in.
All right, I met OSC's sister at this barbecue meet, and she said she had never met V1, although she's met me and obviously Steve a lot of times. She'd never met V1, and so she doesn't know if he exists at all. Anyway, that was just brought up. Like, maybe it was just me and Steve putting on voices. Maybe it is. You can't prove it.
I'm just imagining you with a puppet. Just sitting there. What do you think, Steve? Oh, fucking Lance Storm. Fuck him.
Someone put a bomb in me potato.
What a gobshite. Bleach blonde rat tail.